Oh, my bag. For 900 euro a month, trading places are delighted to bring to the letting market this cool and spacious walk-in freezer. The latest model from Arctic Refrigeration and a veritable ice house, this cold room would make an ideal home during the winter months. Bring the outside in and protect against the worst effects of global warming. Guaranteed not to rise above 0 degrees, you'll save a fortune on the heating bills. Ideally located on site at Aldi, wrap yourself up in a blanket of frozen veg or sample the latest range of vegan ice creams. The freezer is shared with 3 other housemates, Formula One star and Ice Man Kimi Räikkönen, an Arctic fox, and the ghosts of Shackleton. This is not a party house. Would suit a young professional or a polar bear. Available to move in immediately. Deposit and first month's rent to be paid up front. No couples, no students, no hot drinks.
That's fantastic. Can we have Dean Brown, please?
Shara mentioned the applause between each poem. It reminded me of one of my favourite statements in a poetry reading ever, which is a very intoxicated John Berryman, who is getting applauded between each poem. He said, "If I were you, I would reserve my applause until the end and then withhold it." But I was glad to applaud for you, Shara. The poem is called A Recipe for Chili, which is ostensibly a poem about cooking for my girlfriend, but it's actually more, I think, a love poem for my best friend, one of my close friend of mine, Phil, who taught me how to make the chili. It's called A Recipe for Chili. I'm catching the back garden in a colander held up to the kitchen window. The world strains through in particulate green stars topped by blue. When I'm satisfied, I turn and think, if I took a hacksaw and cut up the squat coffee table piece by piece, at what point exactly would it cease to be a table? Which leg, if any, contains essence of table? This kills time. Soon she will be home from a late shift, and I'll have cooked us both a vicious chili, spitting with onion, tomato, the red and yellow peppers, lentils, beans, dashed with paprika, cumin, too much habanero. Now they're mingling and ready to have their tantrum on our tongues. What's left but to uncork a cold stew room and rearrange the sitting room in my head? There is no TV, so all the furniture points to the furniture. I wonder what Monsieur Camus would think of this.
And next, can we have Jack Shortland?
This is actually the poem I read the first night I was in Old Vale, so I'm going to read it again. It's the first time I've repeated myself, so that's good. It's about my daughter. It's called Nature and Nurture. It's for Gillian. I could see her life in her newborn face, my girl with her androgynous spirit. She smelled of her own earthiness. Her anima latched onto my breast. No bother to her, no frets. I laughed. I would have no work to do with her. Solid baby body, her birthed limbs held the flesh of survival in the womb, bigger than her brothers before her. I could feel it off her, her humour, her ability to lead, to nurture, to curse warmly, to soothe us all. That infant fist she would hold for life, to hurl a slitter, to feel the leather of it, to mind the hammer for her grandfather. She would want no princess dress, not my Superman in pyjamas, not my transformer in disguise. Small, strong woman, moon woman, dog loyal to her family, caretaker, craftsman, cat whisperer, best recruit, solving our struggles, soldiering for us, chanting for us, dancing with us, touching somewhere in the core of us. And my notion she was here before, walking the walls of the fort, looking out at her Cork, her accent a part of older lives, her real respect for their fight and their work and her sound humanity for it all. My little girl's dark eyes told me of a kind of knowing in our bonding and our mutual need of a back rub. Her full lips a piece of her heritage, so very Irish, so fucking beautiful, and none of it any of my doing.
Next, can we have Chloe Jesse?
This poem is called Venus in the Moon. In the night sky, I see that Venus is snuggling the moon tonight. I know by the way she has traveled her 4,747 miles that this is her vulnerability. Ethereal body twinkles, seemingly 5 inches by my eyes guess from the tip of the 12% moon. I think its abating glow is her reminder that she'll journey forever to kiss the sliver in a flash of white light that could blind and arrest and shatter her celestial companion. On this same midsummer night, I think back on a memory along the pier with friends I may never see again, and am reminded of the moment my heart walked from my chest, leaving me and splitting herself between her most beloved companions. She hopes to caress the wax and wane of their moonskin faces, to perch on luminescent necks just by the craters of their shoulders. I note these details as they walk those 5 steps ahead of me, inches from my gaze which they cannot see.
Next, can we have Mary O'Connell?
Thank you very much. This actually was inspired by my mother, and I'm using her voice. It's called The Curse of Emigration. Our pub had become the hub for those beyond the village who had not taken the boat to find work beyond the sea. Paddy was my big brother, more like a second father. I never knew my real one. He died when I was 2. I saw him as my idol. He'd hoist me on his shoulders, take me over to his pals, who told me hot mulled porter was great for curing worms. When long Jimmy Davis stood nursing his pint at the bar, small as I was proud to look the guy in the eye. And that time when he was flush, Paddy would buy me bull's eyes. If Nell or Nan made complaint, he'd remind them of my age. Ah, don't begrudge the crater, she's the youngest of ye all. between bottles and barrels, Mother was always busy. Five of the eldest had gone away to toil in the States. Strange that of those who stayed home, Paddy seemed the only one who cared what happened to me. There were times when he'd bring me down the long green to Church Strand, or away to Boss Carey's to get creamery butter that other shops didn't stock. At night, as I crept to bed, we had a game that we played. He'd dazzle me with his lamp to see if my eyes stayed shut. Life was all green and golden before it gave me a shock. Out of the blue, he was gone. He took the train to Cork, they said. I asked when he'd be back. But we're not greatly sure of that. No chance of a straight answer. I waited. Still, I waited. I was lonesome all the time. Flags flying at the regatta, engine rock sold at the pier, as I watched the couples dance to Timmy Keefe's melodeon, I was holding back the tears. Completely lost without him, each day bleaker than the last, I kept hoping for a sign from the one who mattered most. Sometime later, I was sent to get matches from the bar and heard Joe Brennan asking how Paddy was getting on working in Australia. A knife went through my stomach, so painful I couldn't cry. Knowing he was gone forever, he'd not even said goodbye.
Thank you, Mary. Next we have Claire O'Moore.
Find a passion quirked with a burning muzzle seared with gargling drew. One hatched yesterday, dropped in the chute, awaiting some mother, whose gate hazed up North Street, hailing some cab and flaking rolling tyres, two haunts a trier. Needless holly knitted to the banister, whirling round with a gossip of love. Love gnashed into two seeds. Grow my pleasantry. A tut of anger broken down the centrepiece, 50 acres cut too wide. Frail cotton-tubed brains pawing at the windows. A drill fixing the sideshow, panels toppled, performing backflips. Ice-cold racers bubbled in a vat, with burping black flies lying in this mass. Handle trees shut them eyes, guide them upwards, trust to heaven's gas. Yoked, homed by Venus, the reins, the whip lashed in tiny quivers. Croaking lacerations, donned on the back of the knees, the holy order rinsed with the sullen, dull hemisphere of lust, couched in semi-folds of misgivings, laying it bare, recoiled and knitted in the heathen premarital gesture, jiggling vials of emotions, baggaged and slumped in the overload, abandon all feeling, timed with unease, abandon all feeling. Gross payrolled concubine scarfed and bamming a once feeble body, abandon all feeling. A mouth harangued into mounted kisses, abandon all feeling. Bootlaced incision, abandon all feeling. Spliced divine territory into quarter lodges, abandon all feeling. Grasped less than a minute, abandon all feeling. Pierced with a moaning, hacked off the derision, abandon all feeling. Stalled, musing, base motions, catapulted into the wings of an unnerved, unifying jab, dining on the twangy rot of dished emotion, crushed, flashing into the soil of the earth, dechristened, hosting the detestable name, hugging the title, the dirty one.
Thank you, Claire. And next, can we have Rob O'Donoghue?
read my writing, whatever. Just my hair. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I spat out that chewing gum that I should have binned. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I gave the world shit when I thought it was wind. Bless me, Father, for I will continue. Oh no, don't bless me, Father, for I will continue to sin. You took my man and you took my nan. Oh, yeah. You're full of shit, spit, and spunk, and that is why, to me, you're a cunt.
Thank you, Rob. Can we have Patricia Walsh, please? Woo!
You! It's got a fugitive noise. Laughter commencing at a timed-out joke that was away from duty, a cruel attention, dissociating where needed, a cruel punchline, sadly rescued at an expensive diatribe. The unwrapped fashion show shows itself off, parade through streets of glorious difference, drinking coffee on a sliding scale, the home stretch always better at expense. Aborted creativity, an excuse not to bother, cutting costs over tea time, quid pro quo. Sudden treats unwanted go speedily back. Ugly buildings knocked down for sake of peace. Being loved is crippling, sitting outside. That voicemail vomits its timely curse. Payment for a missed on pain of heart's fatigue, marking monuments as astute landmarks. Shortening long cuts, slicing to ribbons. The face that never saw effort, no tears. Soliciting disaster over princess's dance. Bereft her experience, mothballed joy. Mobile abuse over silence and communication. Truth over beverage of tiring exercise. Minor explanations but the living colour. Take talking over failure, living at risk. Be that as it may, mystery tours, wind up discerning, blocking sanity, expensive for the destination worth money, careering to a dominion again. Losing the common touch, retrieved at will. Amplified summers, soothed the everyday. A hearty noise, welcoming the plebeians. A sickening urge to realize your fate. Thank you.
That's Patricia. And next, can we have Philip Spillane?
This is based off something that kind of woke me up the wrong way. Has anyone ever seen Grave of the Fireflies?
Yeah.
Yes.
What you have? Beautiful.
It's a good film.
It's a beautiful film, and it's very heartbreaking. But the thing is that it's an anime, and it belongs to a studio called Studio Ghibli or Ghibli. And the thing about it is that there's a fan group that are absolutely adore that studio. And I'm part of that fan group to a certain limit.
Woo!
But the thing is that there's a culture that's built up around it that people have to cry in the end. And this rubbed me up the wrong way because it's actually based off something that's true. Something that's actually happened. It's not fantastical. It's not something fictional like Spirited Away or Princess Kawasaki, or Princess Mononoke, whatever you want to cry at in the end. It's something that's actually true. It's a biographical tale. It's like crying at the end of Schindler's List. You know, we don't know what it's like to live through something like that. Live through something that, a war, a battle, two little kids. And it's, there's kids that are, you know, refugee kids that are coming up through Europe that are living exactly the life those two kids lived through Grave of the Fireflies. And why would you want to cry and make a joke out of that? And that's what's actually happening. There's all these memes of crying at the end of this movie. And I don't know, it just rubs me up the wrong way. So this is what this poem is inspired by.
Yes.
When the rhythmic lilt of tears trinkles on the eavesdroppers, from the royal blue storm clouds that shrouds above both Thelae and Melpomene masks. The audience will forget they are watching the drama through a looking glass, and cry as if it was their own sister that burnt at the pyre. Softened by the fictional petrichor aroma, the fans comically camouflage their weeping, whitewashing the reality, in spite that it's someone else's true story. Thank you very much.
Can we have Killian O'Regan, please?
So this one was written for both the anniversary of my grandfather's death and the centenary of World War One, and because my grandfather and my great-grandfather, who served with the American Foreign Legion in the war, are buried side by side, and it's called a Remembrance Day. Mm. War's lost embers are remembered as poppies and lilies, fighting, uniting on the Remembrance Day. From towns and cars you returned to fields where you rest on one's Remembrance Day. Your body and soul called to rest like the sons of Europe and their cousins on that Remembrance Day. Your lessons on life and mathematics have stuck true to your familial students on this Remembrance Day. I never met you beyond stories, photographs, and tears shared on our Remembrance Day. Under your supervision, I worked in the shop, honoring you on your Remembrance Day.
Thanks, Gillian. And next, can we have Kieran McCartan?
Teeth guard the voice box. Customs officers for anything getting in or out of the main thoroughfare of the body. The enamel grill that protects the processes of vocal expression and prepares the necessaries for ingestion. Border patrol, growing stauncher with every attempted invasion, clenching tighter and gleaming whiter as the imperial world takes all manners of measures to dictate the workings of the throat. To get in beneath the surface and make melodies with your chords, to play the same tune as those all around, harmonizing to sound a resounding yes. Every day the body is breached. The forces of profiteers and buccaneers smuggling unknowns into your body, unknowns concealed in vague sentences in a language meaning nothing, not to be understood and so impossible to be objected to. Poisons of the mind that manipulate its output, rigor mortis for the imagination. Failed humours and spirits that are inhaled through clenched teeth and seep in through the chambers of the ears impossible to close. Looting your language from your tongue. Tear gas sprayed from malicious mouths and disembodied voices that warp your every no into a yes. From a factory of consent. The clearer your stance, the harder they work to distill some ambiguity. When you said no, didn't you mean no problem? No worries. Of course. Do it then. See, you really wanted it all along, didn't you? Deny it, go on, deny it then, and deny it again. As you try to catch up with the speed and nonsense of their speech, your hesitation is taken as a key to a lock, and through they pour. And you know, known as no aggressive, hoping to hold no grudge, no grievance, and are recognized first by your rear teeth, a tense showing of beauty. and flex spine and raise fist and pray of beating heart thumping adrenaline flowing through every inch of your convictions, commander in chief of all of your beliefs, everyman and extremist, with valiant courage you face your fears, but it's impossible to close your ears, infiltrated by information that means nothing to you, filling you with nothing but angst and a longing to be somewhere else, do something else, meet someone else, experience the frailties of a disappearing world with them and their fun friends, and lying beside them at night, popped up by light and noise, like hot air filling a balloon, with eyes glazed, drunk on confusion, where your ambition is a series of gains, quenching your desire in the shortest space. This is how convenience tastes. Don't you like it? Don't you? You do. You do, don't you?
Next, we have Haley Hughes.
Like that, you preemptively lowered the mic.
He's getting there.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
So I've been working with the sonnet form, and this is a rough first draft. But there are some phrases that I should give you some context so that you understand. The title of this is Montani Semper Liberi, which is the state motto of my home state, West Virginia. It's Mountaineers are always free. And I referenced the Mango Oak, which was, I think, the tallest oak tree on our side of the Mississippi until 1938, when it died and had to be timbered. And the state bird of West Virginia is the red cardinal. And I think that's it. Montani Semper Liberi. Press your fingers into the warm asphalt. See it give under the weight of your name. Do you dance under a sky of cobalt? The honeysuckle call you blessed. Open their buds on the land unclaimed. Even now you hear the earthy pines wheeze. As amber flames beget black cloak, you smell like a fire smoldered by a wet breeze. My mountains, you say, my cardinals, my mango oak. But why have you left your home, your kin? The mango oak is dust and mountaintops leveled. These are the costs of your sin. I am lost, you say, among the naked coughs. Take me home, you plead, where cattails whisk dusky sky and dot trails of green.
Thank you. And we actually have like 9 minutes left, so I'm gonna take the diversity. So I read it before, but it's Marie Laveau.
Yay!
I've been reading it for Dave.
Yay!
She was like a sassy voodoo queen, and like in like a kind of a TV show she's been adapted in. She's immortal, so like she. That's kind of what. And in real life, she lives on. Where's she from? New Orleans.
Yeah.
Voodoo
queen.
Voodoo queen. Right. And I'm going to try and do it in her accent.
Very cultural appropriation.
Okay. I've walked through centuries in these heels, taken so many names me cannot keep track. Sasha, Ingrida, Florence, Sunita, binned a tattered list of dead lovers. All melded into one another, but give me something real to cry about. Oh, I'm rare, rarefied, that's my word. 100 years in college got knowledge to burn. I'm on the verge of deity. I could be the world's technician. It hasn't always been easy. I couldn't get therapy to reflect my immortality. They would lock me away for eternity, then discover me and study my skin. What a gas that would be. What a gas. I'm speaking from the wrong era, as I have been known to do, with blank-eyed people staring at me in my antiquity. I brush it off and get lost and ghost. I dare say I'm the most alone. I guess if I've learned anything, it's that people never change. I hear you all talking about Trump. I've seen Genghis Khan and Hitler and watched their ghastly power filter down the eaves of society. So give me something real to cry about. Acting like the world is so messed up. You know it keeps spinning without your opinion. And then death comes and you're blinking into oblivion. The great chase of the human race, one problem after another, all so delicate. But let me ask you this. Do you care if your grandfather couldn't get a date at 16? No. So give me something real to cry about. So that concludes our evening. And if you're all up for it, we're going to be over at Main's, which is just down there. Just follow a bunch of us. And thank you. Yay. Have a good night. Oh, and thank you to Shara.